who's an environmentalist anyway? These days, it's sort of a forest tree question. The closer you look, the harder it is to tell the difference between granola-eating tree huggers from the corporate suits selling the virtues of going green. Then there's the religious right warning about global warming, and typically conservative hunters taking up the cause of preserving habitats. To help sort out the distinctions and political implications of the changing environmental landscape, we turn to Timothy Profeta, director of Duke University's Nicholas Institute for Environmental Policy Solutions. Thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You recently conducted a poll on environmental issues. What did you find that surprised you?
Well, the first we found, which has been found in many polls, that the vast majority of Americans support the protection of our environment, numbers of 80-85%. When asked in the abstract. But when you ask them whether they would vote on the issue, it has low voter resonance. And that was confirmatory. We did the poll and we confirmed that result. What we really wanted to get after, though, is why. What explained that disconnect? And what we found was that people could easily say that they support environmental protection, but they looked at these issues through many different lenses. They looked at it through the economic effects, through the moral obligations to the future generations, to the health effects, et cetera. And you had to appeal to their interests through all those lenses through which they look to really get their support. That was really the next layer that we had tried to get after in this poll.
So are we talking about a new environmentalism, do you think?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that...
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Kashi, maker of all-natural foods, founded on the belief that everyone has the power to make healthful changes. Kashi, 7 whole grains on a mission. The Kresge Foundation, investing in nonprofits to help them catalyze growth, connect to stakeholders, and challenge greater support. On the web at kresge.org. The Annenberg Fund, for excellence in communications and education. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation, from vision to innovative impact, 75 years of philanthropy. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. And coming up, Ni Chi Ren, Dao Shi Bu Chu. That's Go West, Young Man, in Mandarin. A journey to Chengdu on the frontier of China's economic expansion. First, this note on emerging science from Emily Taylor.
Remember your first curse word? You thought your mom was going to wash out your mouth with soap, didn't you? So you closed your eyes and prepared for the worst. Well, maybe you didn't. A recent study from scientists at the University of Wisconsin-Madison shows that the human brain can have a response that is based on the perception of taste, regardless of whether the taste buds actually experience the sensation. After enlisting 43 students to undergo MRI brain imaging, assistant professor Jack B. Nitschke tested the ability of their brains to react and liquid was dropped into their mouths. But Nitschke didn't always match the cues with the taste the subjects were anticipating. So when some students saw a cue for a less bitter taste, less bitter is what they perceived, even if the actual taste was bitter. Nitschke was able to ultimately conclude that the brain acts differently when it anticipates a sensation as compared to when it experiences a sensation unexpectedly. Sensory input could be largely based on perceptions of, say, fear or joy, rather than on reality. Nitschke hopes to use these anticipatory processes in the brain to help people dealing with anxiety and depression. That's this week's Note on Emerging Science. I'm Emily Taylor.
China's leaders have plotted an ambitious course to ensure the nation's power-hungry economy doesn't sputter and fall. Over the next 15 years, they plan to build 30 nuclear power plants and double the nation's hydroelectric output by 2010. Much of that energy will come from the controversial Three Gorges Project, which harnesses China's mightiest river, the Yangtze. Hundreds of towns, villages, and ancient sites were submerged to create a reservoir as long as Lake Superior, and nearly 2 million residents were forced to relocate. While promising energy for the future, the Three Gorges Project also fueled China's fledgling environmental movement, which was powered by a human dynamo, dissident journalist Dai Qing. Known as DQ by her friends, she published a book about the environmental consequences of the Three Gorges Project. It's called The River Dragon Has Come. The book was banned in China, but Dai Qing has brought it west, and she's here in our studios. May I call you DQ?
Yes, of course.
Your book was written in 1990. It was published in English in, 1998. Mm. you predict some very dire consequences from the Three Gorges project. You say that it's going to be 1.9 million people displaced, ancient sites submerged underwater, that there was going to be flooding of hundreds of towns, and it was going to be really a mess. Have your predictions come?